Oompa oompa oom boom. Oompa 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 oom. We see verse is oompa 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 oom. And then all the stuff's like, it's a real, and then gara ki 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 gara. And then the other one is ta ta punka ta kunka ta kung 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 ta ta. Those four things. I have that in the symphony for the Nashville Symphony. I had the oldest subject go just by ourselves to get the groove, and then kara ki kara ki ka ka kara, and the tiri, and then pali ta ta chi ka ta chi. Each one coming in, so that the audience and the musicians could hear. They could play the most complicated, you know, Stravinsky and outrageous stuff, but they had to do that and keep it in time. Everybody got confused. I said, ladies and gentlemen, I've been lost for the last 5 years practicing that, and I'm finally getting it so I can do myself. It just about wrecked my marriage and drove everybody crazy practicing. But it's so, then when I heard Los Muñequitos de Matanzas, those guys, they got that so built in. Nobody's playing any of the four patterns. You can say, oh, that's column A, the chopped liver or whatever. You know which pattern that is. The pattern's in their head. So they're playing everything else around that. And you wonder what the hell's happening. It's so humbling.
Yeah.
You think you're good, boy, then you play with. And once you start to study that, you can notate and learn any kind of music. Because you realize it might take 3 or 4 or 5 years just to get it started. Then you get the sound the way they play it. Tito Puente's place where it's all we the boom, bing, bing, bong. I used to write a boom, bing, bing, bong, boom. And it's actually, he said, it's boom, bing, bing, bong. And the tail goes over to the one, and the one's implied by the sustaining. Isn't that crazy? It's some real deep stuff. When I see in our culture, now places all over the country where people are, you know, stoned out on everything possible, you say, well, I honestly think if they could all sit down and try to practice an instrument or listen to an instrument or watch jazz in the tube and see these people on this staggering level of musicality. I don't mean just jazz musicality. I mean music, period. They could hear a Latin rhythm section, see how everybody can just play one pattern for half an hour and be so in tune that it's so collective and so beautiful. When I played a show called Mountain Stage, they had a group from Zimbabwe come and play. They were unbelievable. And a woman afterwards in this West Virginia town where it was filmed, she said, man, those cats from Africa, it was like one person. And I said, well, that's the idea. We all sacrifice ourselves and we become one because we're all following the music, and the music takes over. The music is the star. And I learned from Mayra Casals, C-A-L-E-S, M-Y-R-A is first name, Mayra Casals, a wonderful, what they call a kungera. Kungero is the guy who plays the kungas. And they didn't used to allow women to do that. Especially if it was something where they were using elements of the religious aspects of that wonderful music, some of which crept into the mainstream. And her four brothers, she was brought up in Florida, came, I think, to the States as a child, and her four brothers were all conga players. She was terrific. And she used to play with us, and I said, Myra, you know, she was so beautiful and so personable, and she would play solos. Suddenly this wonderful small elegant lady that would look like a bank president or something would get up and play a solo and knock the house down, and then she'd go back to playing a basic tumbao, T-U-M-B-E-A-U, I think it's spelled, or, but you know that, And she played that tumbao, just that pattern, with such grace and such a beautiful tone, and be listening so hard, you could just start soaring. It would just be like a wonderful airplane just taking you way up there into the heights and soaring. And I said, you know, Myra, you do that, we can just soar over that. You could be, play those hot licks and then go and just make us all feel so good. She said, man, she said, in Cuba we call that sacrificio. I said, what's that? She said, you sacrifice your own stuff to make everybody else sound good. And then she said the kick line, which I wish they'd put on the walls of every conservatory, the Harvard Business School and the White House and everywhere, which is, and when you go home, you feel good. I said, boy, isn't that beautiful? The idea of trying to contribute to the whole. And Duke Ellington said it much more economically than I did. They said, Duke, what advice have you got for young musicians? He said, listen. And then Sonny Rollins told me in 1955 when I was, my first gig, I was playing with Mingus. And Sonny came and he'd come back from Chicago and he was starting a whole new chapter in his life. And he used to come and sit in with Mingus. We even played a gig together at a college, which is one of the thrills of my life. And I said, Sonny, I heard this one guy playing a solo sax, tenor saxophone player, and all he did was play dap, 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 da, dap, dap, da, dap. And he just played one note for the whole solo. He said, Dave, he said, don't put that guy down. He said, that's the best he can do. That's how he feeds his family. That's his thing. In other words, implying the old biblical saying, judge not that ye be not judged. So if you didn't dig it, rather than being critical, you would say, okay, I'll try to do something else. And Lester Young summed it up when, famous story, when someone came in and said, Prez, I want to play for you, and Lester Young, being the consummate gentleman, said, si vous play, my man, and sat down, and the guy played the bombing of Hiroshima, Arnold Schoenberg's greatest outtakes, and Giant Steps four times faster than the Olympic gold record in a different key. And just about tore the house down. Lester Young sat there very quietly. He said, that was most impressive. He said, now I'd like to hear your story. And I just say all that because we can get so much off the track. And then when jazz becomes institutionalized and gets the trappings of either money or academia, sometimes the whole point of it, as well as the whole point of anything, that gets put in a bottle of formaldehyde by a cultural anthropologist or gets put in a curriculum where the people in charge of the curriculum don't love what it is that they're teaching and try to be a humble servant of that beautiful thing that they're letting us, that they're teaching us about, then you don't have anything to do with why you should bother to study it. So when you see jazz on the tube, you don't need me, certainly, or anybody else to tell you what it is. They just put when it was, who played, where it was, and the name of it. And then you can just sit back and say, wow, and go to school. I've tried to tell kids that since I'll be 87 this November 17th, the first 80 years of my life, or 80 some until I saw jazz in the tube, my YouTube in general was the conservatory of hangoutology, wherever I was at 3 o'clock in the morning, and learning in every language, including English, to say please and thank you. And then if you're trying to learn about a specific kind of music, once you establish the fact that you were a human being and a fellow human being and respectful and honored to be in a place where you never thought you were going to be and learn from it and want to learn more, then to learn to say, where is one, please? Can you show me the one, please? And that was beautiful. Could you show me that one more time? Mm. And just by being patient and having some manners and being polite and humble and eager, it's amazing how much you can learn from people who will show you stuff.